This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. As always, thank you for joining us. I say often, you guys have a ton of different options out on the web, and it feels like there's a new one every day as far as podcasts to go listen to. So we really appreciate you guys taking a few minutes to talk with us. Today is always one of my favorite subjects when I'm talking to a restaurant owner operator who also understands tech. It's so much fun for me. And so today we are joined by the founder of the Culinary Hub, and I'm going to hack up his name because it's French, and I told him I was going to hack Gregoire, and I know I hacked it, but Gregoire, can you introduce yourself to our audience out there and tell us a little bit about, one, how to say your name properly, and two, kind of who you are and where what your history is a little bit before we jump into Culinary Hub and what you guys are doing?
Yes, hello there. Thank you for popping in the show, and thank you for having me on your great podcast. I'm very honored to be there. So my name is Gregoire Jacquet. That's the name of the business too. It's called Gregoire, and it's somewhat a French high-end takeout. My background is culinary background. Of course, I started cooking at 14 years old in France, and I went to class and training for 3 years, and then I started working. I moved to the U.S. I was 19 and started working for a French master chef called Jackie Robert in San Francisco. He took me under his wings and trained me and really and showed me around the ropes of fine dining in America, which is, you know, it was very different back then. We're talking about 89. And I worked for him for, 5 years, I believe. And after that, I decided that I needed more of the management techniques. See, in France, it's the way we treat people and the way we act with people is a very different thing than here. So I figured I really needed some help with that. And I asked Jackie to find me a job at the Ritz-Carlton. I waited 6 months. And an opening came, and I became the banquet chef at the Ritz-Carlton San Francisco. Now, that was an experience. Coming from fine dining, going to like high volume fine dining, was really something else that I've never experienced before. I learned so much. Doing those extra large party, and I hope more people would do that, just because it helped me in the long run to really understand and run my business. I did a lot of managing, lots of number. I moved around a lot in the company. I opened hotels, Bali, Jamaica. I worked at the Ritz-Carlton Boston. I worked at the Ritz-Carlton Puerto Rico. I really moved around and learned a lot of styles, cuisines, and also relationship with people. Around the world, people are really different from one another.
Yes.
So that was really important for me, and that helped me also, open and run my business. In 2001, we decided to have a baby, me and my wife, and we came back to our city in Berkeley, California, where we opened our business, Gregoire. So that was in 2002 when we opened it.
Wow. Oh, hey, I didn't say you go big or you go home, have a baby and open up a business. And part of what I love about, as I said in the intro, I love about restaurateurs is the amount of experience and the stories. I can't help but ask, cause I personally am a huge Ritz-Carlton fan. One, have you read the book, the Horace Schultz book, Excellence Wins? And if you have, I guess what, and if you haven't, it's really just a story of him as the CEO and kind of how he took the Ritz-Carlton and continued to continue to both learn and grow that brand throughout the years. But I guess first question is, have you read that book? And if so, was it on the inside similar to what he would write in the book?
You know, actually, I have not read the book, but I can tell you that I lived the Ritz-Carlton philosophy for 7 years. I worked with him. We went together in openings, him and the executive team. So I really breathe and really everything in the book is just true. Even if I didn't read it, the guy is so genuinely the best restaurateur hotelier that's around.
I love it. I got a ton out of that book. And for those restaurateurs that haven't been out into the space and had the opportunity to experience the Ritz-Carlton experience, whether it's only one night that you stay forever in your life, it is a different experience that you can't, you just can't comprehend until you've done it. The first time I ever stayed at a Ritz-Carlton, I was like, this is on a different level that I had never experienced before. And so, I love that you had that experience, because I'm certain, you know, for the last 20-ish years that you've been running your own business, so many of those things impacted you that you learned. So talk to me a little bit about kind of what it is that you guys opened up in 2001 or 2002 as far as your business, because it's different. It's different from what I've researched. It's different from what you and I have talked about. It's different from the Ritz-Carlton. It's different from, you know, fine dining in France, certainly. And there's a ton of similarities, I would say, that just until you experience it, until you do the research, until you're there, I guess change your perception of what is possible.
Mm-hmm. So it was 2001 when I decided to stop working with the Ritz because we wanted to create a family, and it was time to think of what I wanted to do really and how I wanted to do it in my life with my wife. And I mean, we had a home in Berkeley, California, where my wife is from. And we needed to do something close by. Being at work for another company was not the right thing for us. So the only thing was to create a business. Now, oh my God, I needed to create a business that would fit our lifestyle.
Yes.
And the baby was going to be born, you know, six or eight months, you know, before the restaurant opened. We didn't know we wanted a restaurant, but I knew that I didn't want a big restaurant, because I have come to see that being big is not the best. We have to deal with a lot of people. We have to deal with a lot of hurdles in the business. And mainly, I wanted to use my talent to really be in the business or make the business, because I had a lot of talents. I mean, I was great with numbers. I was great with people. I had tremendous, I hired and fired people at the Ritz. I was trained to do that. And I love to talk to people. I'm a great customer service oriented person. I love what I do, and I love to share what I do. And so didn't want to stifle my needs to really be involved in the business in every side.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where this idea of making a takeout, but just a kitchen. Okay. I wanted to create a kitchen where people would come in and order the food and then wait and talk to me. I would talk to them. They would ask me questions. What's best? What's fresh? What's this? What's that? So that was the first really business model that we came about. And of course, I love food and I love fresh ingredients. I grew up in farms in France. So for me, I was getting the milk in the morning to the farm, you know, for my breakfast. And I was getting fruits and vegetables from the garden. And we used to, just let's be honest, slaughter the pig twice a year to freeze it or make ham or smoke the meat, or, you know, so I know what good food is and I know where it comes from. I wanted to use this in my restaurant, using ingredients from close by and using farmers. So that was the number two. Number three, it needed to fit my lifestyle. So I didn't want to work forever all the time. Mm-hmm. At first, I closed 2 days a week, which was, you know, really nice. But how can I say that? I wanted to serve the customer, but yet be happy in my work. Of course, at first, I mean, I worked really hard to build a name and build the business. But after a while, you know, those hours, and I would come at 9 o'clock in the morning and I would leave, you know, at 7 o'clock at night, and just, you know, I would see the family, I would be there around, and that would suit me very well. I wanted a restaurant that opens all day. Okay, so from lunchtime to dinner time, so people could come and eat anytime, because my biggest frustration in Berkeley is that it was no place to eat good food all day long. So they would be open at 11, then close at 2, and then open back at 5, and then close at 9. And for me, it doesn't suit my lifestyle. So all around, this is why I created Gregoire, just to have a place where I can be happy and my customer can be happy. The takeout part was really that I didn't want a big dining room. And if I don't want a dining room, then I needed to...
you got to figure out a different method.
But at that time, takeout was not that big. I mean, it was pizza, Chinese.
Yeah, I was going to ask burgers or whatever. I was going to ask. So it's such an interesting paradigm. And part of what I gave you as far as the intro, and I apologize for cutting you off, but it's like, it's such a different experience, because I have always held the theory, and I think that it's incredible. And we'll talk a little bit more about how the pandemic has impacted and been good for the business and bad for the business. I'm sure there's lots of stories there, but I've always considered fine dining to be an experience and good quality food to be an experience. And I think, you know, you guys have been doing this for 20 years now. Like 20 years ago, there was no quality food. You guys were early in that paradigm. Nowadays, you can get more high quality food from different brands in a quick service or a takeout fashion where it is fresh, it is farm to table, it is the ability to get high quality product at the time. 20 years ago, that didn't exist. It sounds like, you know, you guys were one of those innovators. Talk to me a little bit about, I mean, I understand why you're there. I understand based on your Ritz-Carlton history, based on growing up on the farm in France. I get that. But talk to me about the challenges of even getting that product in, because one, there's the challenge of supply chain. Two, there's the challenge of customers. Like, they might like it, but that product oftentimes costs more than the ground beef that you're getting at McDonald's for a cheeseburger. Talk to me a little bit about what those challenges look like, especially with a brand new baby.
Well, that was a vision, and I know, and I remember like it was yesterday. Every time someone would walk by and look at the restaurant being built and ask me the question, What is that business? And I said, well, it's, you know, high hand takeout, you know, like restaurant food in the box.
Mm-hmm.
A what?
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I'm chuckling about it because I think that same thing from 20 years ago. I'm sure I would have had some similar. Why would you do that? Who's going to order that stuff? So I'll let you continue.
What? And yeah, in the mind of people, high hand dining was only accepted in people's dining room, and chef. Oh my God, chef.
Yes.
Ever wanted to put their precious food in a box.
Yep.
You know, so, but I took that and I said, you know, I'm going to prove myself, not only myself, but the world, that it is so possible. If you work with your ingredients and if you do it right, you will be able to really, the quality of the food will not suffer at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for that, I needed to find about a way to put my food in a box.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I'm sure even packaging back then wasn't nearly the same, because what I found even through COVID, and one of the big things that people forget is product on a plate, it travels very differently than product in a box.
Correct. I've, of course, and I have many stories, but that's the thing. You know, when I first started with that concept, my thing was, okay, I have everything panned up. Now I need to find a box. Mm-hmm. And I looked and I asked for samples and I looked and I couldn't find anything at all. There was nothing that really would keep the food, you know, hot, beautiful, and the fries crispy and everything. Yes. You know, it just was nothing around, just clamshells, styrofoam, and I didn't want to use that. I was a high-end place. I didn't want to use disgusting, nasty product. So I decided to create my own box.
Oh, wow. Which, that's incredible.
Yeah, which I did out of my apartment home with the software. And I went to a box manufacturer locally, you know, it was in Award, I think. And I said, can you do that box? And he looked at it and I said, yes, we can. How many do you want? And then I said, I don't know.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know who's going to buy it, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, you know, we made a deal. I mean, the box was a little different from now then, but the look is the same. Everything was the same. It's just a cardboard that's a little different, but it keeps it hot. We have a vent to open if we do fry food. It's really, it's still to this day working with our business beautifully. And a lot of people want that, but every week I have someone that calls and say, where do you get those boxes? Can I have them?
You know, I love it. And I'm sure it helped quite a bit to have that. And we'll get into it here in a few minutes. But I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, between your upbringing, your Ritz-Carlton days, there's obviously a very famous other restaurant in Berkeley, based in Berkeley, that does the farm to table thing, but it's more a dining room deal. Did you take any inspiration from, the Chapanese and kind of that whole, you know, and again, I know it's not the same, but it reminds me a lot of that, you know, and I have been there one time myself, and it's a pretty amazing experience when you go, because it's so different than what we experience here, primarily in the US, as far as, you know, dining at all. Did you guys take any inspiration from, you know, kind of how they were doing farm to table stuff, you know, even back in the 70s and whatnot?
The inspiration, I mean, you know, I had never been to Chapanese then.
Okay.
You know, just because I worked so much and I cooked a lot at home for my wife. But the inspiration is not new to me. It's the way I grew up.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, it was nothing new. For the American people, it was. But me, I grew up in farms and I grew up with you know, I had pigeon and chicken and rabbits that we were eating. So, I mean, for me, I wanted that lifestyle.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the honesty.
Now, they came and asked me for the recipe of my potato puff.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Tell me that story, because I'm sure our listeners would love that before we kind of dig into kind of what where you guys are going and kind of how you're hoping to democratize what it is that you guys have been doing.
Well, we have a couple of recipes that are made by, you know, that are our own recipe. And for instance, then the first one is the potato puff. So the potato puff came since day one, and I created that. I was trying to do menu planning and organize, you know, trial and at home. And I it was a recipe that I was trying to do, and I messed it up completely, but it turned out to be really good. So the first day I opened Gregoire, I put that on the menu, and I wanted to change the menu every month.
Uh-huh.
Which we did change every month. So everything would change every single month, and including the potatoes and including everything. But when I start serving those potato puff, everybody went crazy for them. And knowing that I was going to remove the menu, and I mean, the next month, everybody would say, no, you can't take this thing out. You can't take this thing out. And so since, you know, day one, 20 years ago, we've been selling potato puff. I mean, just that's what we
do. That's one of your signature dishes? Got ya.
About a year, I would say about a year or two after we started the restaurant, I get a call. It was probably a year. I get a call, and it's like, can I get some potato puff? I'm like, sure. Well, I would like an order of potato puff. I'll come and pick it up. And I'm like, okay, We do that all, you know, all the time.
Yeah, so yeah.
I make it. And there's a tall guy that comes to the restaurant after 5 minutes. And he goes, "Hi, I ordered some potato puff. Okay. Do you know who I am?" I'm like, "No." "Well, I am Cal. I'm the chef from Chez Panisse." I'm like, "Ah, okay, great. Then there's your potato puff. Well, I have a question for you. Do you think we can have the recipe for the potato puff?" I'm like,
"Wow.
What? Why?" It's like, "Well, you know, we're having a dinner in a couple of days, and we would like to do the potato puff for our anniversary party." I'm like, "Well, I don't think I can do that. You know, this is a proprietary recipe, and this is our bread and butter. We sell a lot of them, and I can't really do that." "Really? But I'm the chef at Chez Panisse." I'm like, "I know you are, but I can't really do that."
Mm-hmm.
So, he left, and I never heard of, you know, him again. I mean, I know him. His name is Cal. He used to be the chef there. I mean, I know the dining room chef that used to be. I mean, we talked about things, but yes, that's my story with Chez Panisse. I mean,
that's a fun story. That's a fun story. Sorry, I just couldn't. You know, I was thinking of the, you know, and I've been there, like I said, and had the opportunity to experience, you know, just the experience, because it's so different. And especially, you know, I mean, they started back in the 70s. It's such a different experience. And even starting in the early 2000s, I'm still super intrigued about, you know, kind of this whole farm to table and bringing high quality food in a takeout fashion, and really, I don't want to say democratizing, like, there's so few people that are able to experience that level of cuisine in their lifetime. And oftentimes I think people experience food almost as a necessary evil, don't necessarily experience the beauty of what food can be and the experiences that it can create, like you've said over the years, which I love that. So talk to me about what's happened over the last 20 years. Have you just kind of been your single restaurant raising your kids, and now they're in their, you know, and you know, it's just you and your wife running the restaurant? Or talk to me a little bit about kind of how it's grown over the years and what you guys have done.
Well, I've done a lot of things, actually. In 2005 or 6, I tried to forget, just because it was right before the 2008
recession.
Recession. We decided to open another restaurant in Oakland, which would help us, because we were so busy and people were asking, you know, can you go in Oakland. And I said, you know, sure. And I looked for a location, a fantastic location on Piedmont Avenue in Oakland that was beautiful, and it was really, really good. And I decided to open another one, but I didn't want to open two restaurants. I wanted to open one restaurant with the culinary, where we would do the cooking in the back and then transfer it to, so we would keep that level of quality in both restaurants at the same time. So we did open in 2006, I think, Gregoire in Piedmont Avenue in Oakland. And we run the restaurant together with Gregoire in Berkeley for 11 years. And it was we're very busy, and the system was working beautifully. We would do the change menu. We would do in Oakland, and then cook all the ingredients in Oakland and bring it to Berkeley. So that I wanted to prove myself that I could do that, and I did. But my gosh, I was a different person back then.
Uh-huh.
And my vision in how to run a business was really different. I wanted to have my hands in everything. I wanted to run this. I wanted to run the cooking. I wanted to do the deliveries. We were so busy that I was working all the time. And I didn't know how to get out of that. It was too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of burned out completely. So, we decided to close after 11 years the Oakland location, just because it was all this, or, you know, me just, you know, it was just too hard for me. And my wife had the babies. I mean, the babies were growing, but they were in high school. And I mean, they were really there. I was not with them. So I said, that's it, no more. So we sold Oakland. And I took a month off.
I went Good to for Europe. You.
Yep. I took a month off and I rebooted. And when I came back, I looked at Gregoire in Berkeley, and I mean, for I didn't touch Berkeley at all for a month, and I came back and everything was just perfect.
Yes. I want to hear about this story because you and I talked about this pre-show, and I'm excited to hear yeah. that epiphany, because it sounds like you had to change, not just from the family and the personal health perspective, but you realized that even without your hand in it, the restaurant was blessed and you were able to do so much more, you know, by setting it up properly. So I'll let you keep telling that story.
Yeah. Just talking about it, give me goosebumps. You know, it was really eye opening that after a month, everything ran fine. My customer were happy. The review were just perfect. And I didn't have to work. I didn't work. And my employee were super happy that I was not there too.
Yeah. They you know, my team members do that same thing. So yeah,
it was just, wow. It was a wow experience. And then for the next 2-3 years, I just was a support system. I mean, you know, when you close a business that is making money,
uh-huh.
because Oakland was making a lot of money, for me, it was hard because I said, wow, my lifestyle, is it going to support, you know, the fact that I'm going to have one restaurant now. And I mean, all the number, it never comes together before you close, you know, you just, and then everything fall in place. Money was perfect. You know, everything just worked out. Employees happy, customer happy. I made enough money to, you know, for my lifestyle. It was just perfect. So I just stand back, looked at the business, worked on the business, you know, helped them out if they needed me. You know, I looked at different ways to do things, like work on the website, work on, you know, a lot of, you know, back-end things to make the business better and more organized. We actually cut down on the menu. I decided to now do, instead of every month changing menu, we do every 3 months. So seasonally, which mm-hmm. made more sense in a lot of ways. And it was all geared to what can I do to have my business run without me, or, you know, with a minimum of me. Okay.
Yep.
And so I've been doing this for 4 years, you know, like just, you know, going there, pick up the money, go to the bank, you know, and really organize and make sure the business run by itself. But just showing my face, because I'm the face of, you know, Gregoire, and my customer all know me, and they've been going there for 20 years. So,
well, and I think that I think it's a great example for those that are listening, especially those that are in a place where they feel like they can't get out from underneath what it is oftentimes stepping back and working on the business rather than working in the business, and identifying those items that only you can do. And allowing others to do what they do or what they were blessed to do or what they're passionate about doing is probably a better chance of success than you trying to do everything, which is what I'm hearing you say, that you did, and kind of that forced stepping back and understanding what it is that you need to do.
Yes, that I agree 100%. I mean, that helped me looking for more technologies, for more, you know, more things to automate and more, you know, make a better business.
Yep. So why don't we go down that path before we kind of talk about how others can engage with your brand. Tell me the areas that you focus your energy and why you found technology. I mean, this is, after all, the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, and those that are listening are probably like 20 minutes in going, all we talked about is really good food and now I'm hungry, but tell me what this has to do with me. And so, you know, you threw out the culinary hub model, you threw out the idea of, you know, of replicating yourself, but through technology, replicating what it is that you guys do by doing only what you can uniquely do. So talk to me a little bit about that journey and why you chose to go down that path and where you think that you had your biggest wins. And if there's any, I'm sure there are, lots of skinned knees and things that you potentially would have done differently if you had to do it again.
Well, okay, all these years, you know, as I said, you know, I had a push button cash register when I first started, and that was so difficult. And I went through many POS systems, you know, to try to find the one that really is automated and that can, you know, make my business much easier. But what I wanted is automation. What I got is automation. You know, going through many POS, going through many systems, but now I have a POS where I can just that. I mean, it's great for the customers, and it's great for the owners.
You know,
my POS. Yes.
Yeah. Go for it.
My POS is it's a good tool. When customer comes in, it phone number, email, they it's all. Let me stop here for a second.
You're good.
Okay, so my POS is it's a really good tool. It link all the online order are linked to the POS. All the delivery orders is linked to the POS, so you don't need to put anything manually in the POS. It's got an awesome loyalty and reward. It's teamed up with an app, so we have our own app to do ordering, which is fantastic these days.
Huge.
Yes, we can do marketing a lot with the POS because we have all those people's phone number and email straight in the POS. So that's fantastic. When orders are ready, it lets people know that the order is ready because it's all takeout. You know, so they wait outside and instead of screaming their name, you know, boom, they get a text and that makes it easy for them. Everything in the kitchen is automated too. You know, it goes from one side to the other of the department. I don't have to run any tickets.
Not run into the kitchen to hang them and whatnot. Well, and I want our listeners to hear this. They've heard me say it, hundreds of times if they've heard it once, is just that understanding what your business wants and needs, you know, you wanted this, you wanted the contact info, understanding who your clients are, understanding, you know, how they're engaging with your brand, being able to talk with them directly, even outside of the third-party delivery or the online ordering pieces, but partnering with that technology provider to get it to where you want it to be is hugely helpful because at the end of the day, that's really what the end goal is to talk to those people and serve them where they want to be. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
The customers, you say?
Well, the technology as much as anything, because, I mean, technology for technology's sake is worthless. Technology that's serving a business purpose is huge. The fact that you're able to talk to your customers, to market to them, to understand what they're ordering, to understand what they're eating, to understand how often they're coming in, to understand, you know, the flows of those things is huge. And I think all too many people will put in POS or put in loyalty or put in marketing automation, but they don't really understand what their end goal is. And
It sounds like whether you
figured it out earlier, you figured it out now, you really know why you're investing the money and time. It's not a cost. It's an investment to making your business better.
You know, years ago when I worked for the Ritz, it started there. You know, I mean, I'm a data type of guy. So every morning we would get a sheet with, you know, food costs, customer loyalty, people that comes back, VIPs, you know, it would be a meeting around what's going to happen this day. And we had all that data that would come in and let us know what, you know, what do we have to do? And it's the same today. You know, I wanted a system where, you know, I can look at if this dish works better than this dish, why these people buy that more than that? Why people want the spicy sauce aside from this? Why, you know, and what time of the day they come and, and last year, how many Valentine's menu did I sell, and when and how did it go? So all this data is—it's what I need and what's important. And you know, years ago, I didn't have the processes and the means to have this data. Nowadays, I mean, data is king. So I love it.
Yeah. Where is it going now? Tell me a little bit more. You know, we're getting closer to our time to wrap up our conversation. But you know, I think you've got something that not just telling the success of what you guys have done, but I love, you know, you said it to me, and I'd love to have our audience hear, you know, kind of the democratization of good food delivered in a good place. Talk to me a little bit about where you guys are going. Talk to me a little bit about the Culinary Hub and all of what's going on with that.
Yeah. So when I decided that I was going to franchise, I took my years with, you know, Gregoire Oakland and Gregoire Berkeley, and I put it in good use. I knew that it would work, you know, with two. So I know it can work with 20, 30. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, what's important in my business is the freshness and the quality of the product. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we need to pass that on to the franchisee, and try to help them, you know, not have to deal with the cumbersome of cooking or cooking the product, mm-hmm. you know, the when it comes. So we decided to create the same model of a culinary hub kitchen in market, where we're going to receive all the product from farmers, all the food, and so build recipes, cook, slice, portion, and do sauces, portion sauces. We do everything in house. So, I mean, and there's secret recipes too that we use, like the potato puff recipe. You know, we don't want to give that away.
Yep.
So we'll do everything, and then they have an app that will allow them to not only do their inventory at night to make sure, you know, they have their stuff, but also to look at the par that they need to have for the next day, so they can order through the app to the Culinary Hub, okay, and then we'll deliver the food the next day in the morning, and they can, you know, use. So what they'll do at the franchise level, they would take all the product that we cook and they would finish the sandwich the same way we do in Berkeley, or, you know, when we had Oakland, they would receive the product and then finish the product, like grill the bread or toast the bread, put the sauce on it, or, you know, grill the meat, or, and then finish the sandwich.
Yep.
Put it in the box and then give it to the customers.
I love it. You know, I mean, the thing that you and I talked about pre-show a little bit that I'm intrigued about is the fact that to do what you do has taken you, you know, I don't know, 30 years to get to the level of quality, to get to the level of experience, to get to the level of exposure, to be able to deliver at the level that you're hoping to. Talk to me a little bit about why you think this is going to work for somebody that may not be a restaurateur, or, you know, they're in a place where they're like, you know what, I always love the product, I always love what they're doing, but now I want to experience it myself as a franchisee.
Well, think about it. You know, 20 years ago when I opened Gregoire, and you had that same thought. You said, "Wow, how did you do it? Why did you do it?" You know, fine dining is expensive. How did you manage to put this into good use and to make sure people, you know, were not, you know, saying, "Wow, it's too expensive. I can't afford this. It's in the box," and having all those judgments, you know, about the food that we do. Well, I'm based on. The size of the place is so small, so I don't have the overhead that others have.
Mm-hmm.
So I can really focus on selling food and price the food right. So, I mean, actually, the way I make money is by selling more food than anyone else. Okay. I sell more food than anyone else. I don't make food on drinks. I mean, money. I don't make money on drinks because, you know, I don't have a liquor license, and a lot of restaurants, you know, offset by the liquor license. Yep. I make money on selling foods. So it's priced right. It's not too much. It's not enough. It's just priced right. And so people, I mean, it's a bit more expensive than any other, you know, not, you know, any other franchise or restaurants, just because our product is different. We use fresh ingredients, and, you know, so, but overall it is not exorbitant. People are not, you know, going home and saying, "Oh my God, it's so expensive, I won't come back." They go, "Oh my God, it was so good and worth it.
Yeah, and I need to come back, and I can get that 5 days a week rather than having to do it only on a special occasion, on an anniversary or a birthday or something like that." Whereas oftentimes that's the experience that a lot of people, it's a special occasion or it's a business dinner when they're going out for fine dining. It's not that you can get that quality.
Yeah, our customers have been coming back for 20 years. Our customers have come one, three times a week.
Oh, wow.
I can tell you that my system tells me my repeat customers. So I look at my system and it says, oh, 64% repeat customer today. Oh, 78% repeat customer today from the last, 200 transactions you had.
That's so amazing.
You know, people are coming back. They really enjoy the food. They really want more.
I love it. I love it. So if I wanted to learn more about what it is that you guys do, how do I engage with you? How do I engage with your team? How do I get, I guess, to the next step now that I'm like, I need this and I need this, where I'm at. I want to get into the restaurant business. I want to understand how to deliver this because I'm passionate about getting good food to people. Tell me a little bit more about what that would look like for somebody that's listening to the podcast that's just blown away with what you're doing and wants to be a part of it.
Well, the best way for sure is to go on our website. That's where you will find the most information. We have two websites. We have the franchise website where you can, look at the business side of it. And mm-hmm. The name of the website is gfranchise.com. It's easy.
Oh, you didn't make them spell that French word, huh?
No.
I love it.
I keep it simple. gfranchise.com. And so there you can really see, the business side and what, mm-hmm. We offer as a franchise, which is completely different from any other franchise. I mean, the support that you're going to get with us is unbeatable. I mean, we have a culinary hub at least 2 hours away from your franchise.
Yeah,
that means
amazing.
That means someone can come to you in less than 2 hours and help you doing whatever or explaining whatever you want. Also, every day we'll have someone from the corporation, a driver, a delivery person, right there with you looking at your business or answering questions if you have or transferring questions if you have. So it really is a model where we are here for you. I mean, we are in hand together,
Yeah.
And so... No, I got sidetracked.
No, you're fine. You're fine. And I mean, I think at the end of the day, part of what people don't understand about the franchise business is that ultimately you need these franchisees to be successful if you're going to be successful growing your brand and continuing to deliver on your brand promise that says, let's put some stuff out there that's going to end up being, being what it is that you want to put out into the world and what you want to be proud of.
That's right. That's right. Thank you. So the other website we have is our website. It's gregoirerestaurant.com. So GREGOIRERESTAURANT.com. It's pretty easy,
Mm-hmm. And then, for somebody who speaks French as a native language, right? Obviously yeah. Teasing you, but yeah, no, I love it.
And there you can see, who we are, what we do as a restaurant. And I mean, you can also type Gregoire restaurant in your browser and man, y'all get all the reviews. And
I'm looking at it right now and I am for those longtime listeners know that I moved from California to Texas and it's about an hour from lunchtime. I have one more podcast to record, but those potato puffs look like they're pretty deadly.
Those
things look pretty amazing. They're right on the front and center of the website. So for those, yes. Don't go to the website if you're hungry because you'll probably eat more than you should, but certainly go check them out.
And they are addictive, I tell you.
I couldn't own a restaurant because I think it'd be 400 pounds if I did.
I have people coming from all over, they fly to the Bay Area and first thing they land, they come to Gregoire to get their potato puff.
I love it. I love it. Yes. They look pretty fantastic, but looking on the website. So,
you can also email me then at gregoire@gfranchise.com. Okay. Or call me at 510-455-0494.
I love it. Well, I have not experienced the brand yet. I'm jealous. I'm a little disappointed, and I promise you, the next time I get to Berkeley, I will be experiencing it. And hopefully, that we'll get some franchise brands that are or franchisees that are delivering on this product promise closer to me. Whether it's in Southern California, which I'm in at least once a month, or here in Texas, it'd be exciting to experience your guys's brand and the product because it looks pretty remarkable. I'm not gonna lie.
Thank you. As I say, we're gonna focus the next few years in the Bay Area. So I don't know how many years, maybe 2 years in the Bay Area, and then probably open another market. So I don't know yet. It depends on the demand of mm-hmm. the other market, but most definitely we can open one market and then another and another. So
I love it.
Yeah, it's we have to open a culinary hub in every market. So it's not going to take time. It's just going to take organization.
Well, I know I've got to get up to Berkeley to go see a client in the next 6 months. So I certainly will be stopping by to go see you, and I'll give you a ring.
Yes, for sure.
Well, thank you for telling me your story. Thank you for kind of giving me a back history of all of what you've done. Again, selfishly, I'm a little bit jealous because now I want those potato puffs, and I may even make a specific trip up to Berkeley to go check them out. But to our audience, guys, we know that you guys have tons of choices, as I said on the onset, as to how you can spend your time. So we appreciate you guys spending time. Gregoire, thank you for sharing your story, for sharing your history, for sharing the brand and kind of where you guys are at. I love hearing the stories. I love listening to restaurateurs, and I especially love listening to restaurateurs that have figured it out and are really investing in their business and helping to deliver great food at a good price to people that need it. Because you know what? Oftentimes people can't experience this. So while you guys are out checking out the website, please go give us a rating on your favorite podcast player, because it does help others to find the podcast. And if you guys have people that you guys think should be on the show, send them my way. Gregoire, thank you so much for your time, and to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.